Hello, listeners. I hope you're all well. First of all, a little apology about the lack of any episodes for the last wee while. I've had some really terrible dental issues, which resulted in not one but two extractions of wisdom teeth at different times and lots of antibiotics, and it all just went on way longer than it really should have. But I'm back, and hopefully we can be posting a bit more regularly now. So today we have a podcast for you where we're looking at the BBC series Burn Wild about eco-terrorists in the 1990s. And for those of you who are in the top two tiers of the Patreon, you will find next week's Hercule Dercule there early and ad-free. And that is about the murder of Elaine O'Hara by Graham Dwyer, a very big case recently in Ireland. So I hope you can all look forward to those, and I'll look forward to posting a bit more often now. You are listening to True Crime Fiction, feeding your addiction to the best of the written and the spoken word in crime. If you would like to support the podcast, you can do so for as little as £1 at patreon.com/truecrimefiction. One of the most pressing questions of our time is what are we going to do about climate change? Especially as the further into climate change the Earth moves, the more we need governments to be acting rather than individuals. There was a time not that long ago when people saw climate change as a belief, an ideology, not a fact. I can remember working in an office where one member of staff complained another member of staff was forcing her beliefs on us when she suggested reasonable changes such as a recycling policy. Things have moved on, though, and now most people recognise that climate change is a fact, not an opinion, and that individual responsibility is not enough. Groups like Just Stop Oil and Extinction Rebellion are taking action, disrupting daily life as a means to highlight the problems that governments are not acting on with the urgency that is needed. This is when things start to become difficult for some. They may feel like climate change is a problem, but people don't want to have their daily lives interrupted. As a long-term art lover, when Extinction Rebellion started to throw soup and various other substances at great masters of European art, I found myself internally conflicted. I believe that art tells us precious and valuable truths and hate the thought of it being destroyed. Conversely, though, can we even create great works of creativity if the world around us is burning? If the aim of the stunt was to make middle-aged art lovers consider what they value more and why they value that, then it was successful. For all the coverage that Just Stop Oil and Extinction Rebellion get, though, they are not the first group who's taken direct action over our terrible treatment of the planet. In the 1990s, the Earth Liberation Front, known as ELF or ELF, took guerrilla action against buildings that were linked to the exploitation or destruction of the environment. ELF categorised their actions as non-violent due to the fact that they would search buildings beforehand to make sure there were no living beings in them. The BBC podcast Burn Wild looks at two members of ELF, Joseph Debe and Josephine Sunshine Overacre, both of whom were on the FBI's most wanted list for years as domestic terrorists. Producers Leah Sottile and Georgia Catt investigate their case and the central question of, if when no one dies, can it still be domestic terrorism? It's hard to see people who were trying to highlight the destruction of the earth and took pains to kill no one alongside those who want to inflict maximum harm and do not care who or how many they hurt in the process, or the so-called lone wolves who have often been radicalised in their bedrooms by movements like incels with only one central ideology of the victimisation of men at the hands of all women, creating a hateful group whose members have already started killing to further their beliefs. Yes, what they did was criminal, and it was also not without victims. While no one was physically hurt, Satili and Kat speak to those whose livelihoods and communities were affected by ELF actions. As is so often the case, the big companies and conglomerates can absorb the losses in the way that ordinary people caught in the crossfire cannot. It is an age-old question. Can crime ever be justified? And if the answer is yes, they can. Who gets to decide what crimes do and don't count? What mitigating circumstances will we choose to ignore, and which ones do we accept? The environmental movement often references the suffragettes, a group of women who, in the early 20th century, campaigned for women's right to vote, sometimes with violence against property, sometimes against themselves. At least one suffragette, Emily Davidson, threw herself in front of the King's Horse at the Epsom races. Although suffragettes were not a criminal organisation, because of their actions they were arrested, sometimes force-fed when on a hunger strike, and now we hail them as heroes. A statue of Millicent Fawcett, one of the leaders of the movement, is now in Parliament Square, London, a rehabilitation of people who were simultaneously scorned, feared, and had the state attempt to suppress them by the same Parliament the square was named after. The suffragettes, however, did not achieve the women's right to vote by their own actions. It was World War I and the massive social upheavals that followed in its wake that really allowed the movement to leap forward. During the war, the suffragettes stopped any direct action, and in fact, some of them supported the state by handing out white feathers as a condemnation to conscientious objectors. Not a huge amount of allyship going on there. It was also the amount of women who joined the workforce. Some of them joined the armed forces and, although not in combat, would be mechanics, driving ambulances, camouflage artists, or telephone operators. Outside of the forces, women were part of the land army who kept farms running or took on dangerous munitions work. In their actions, women proved that they were and can be as useful as men. They demonstrated their ability to knuckle down and work hard. It would not be wrong to point out that traditional women's work at that time was also hard physical work, but the reality of that time was that despite the physical, emotional and mental labour of being a wife and mother, servant and cook, the work was just not seen as hard, and it still isn't today. Joseph Deeby was caught in 2018 and he was brought to trial in Oregon for his role in arsons in the 1990s, causing damage to a plant that butchered wild horses and then sold them as meat to Europe, and a Bureau of Land Management who corralled the horses. He was sentenced to time served, meaning he was free to carry on the much quieter life that he had established for himself. The leniency of his sentence also signalled something. While the FBI have doggedly tracked both DB and Overacre for decades, that perhaps the court of public opinion has changed somewhat, partially because America went through the coordinated 9/11 terrorist attacks, the biggest attack they had experienced on their home ground in modern history, the mass amount of casualties, the shock and horror of those attacks, made an arson with no casualties feel somehow smaller. Another factor may be that we have a greater understanding of what climate change means. In the early days of public discussion of climate change, people would joke that it would be nice for rainy old Britain to suddenly be like the Algarve. Since then, we've seen Australia burn, America burn. Last summer, this same rainy isle also hosted spontaneous combustions, having reached its burning point with soaring temperatures. At other points, we have flooding so severe that lives are lost and crops rot in the fields. Multitudes realise that a hot 2 weeks in southern Europe is not the same as trying to exist at a temperature your nation's infrastructure and your own biology cannot operate optimally at. Add to this, in Britain, we have seen how eco-activists have been terribly treated by the state. For some time, there were undercover police in environmental groups. Groups that, while disruptive, were not exactly creating the same kind of threat we can see from other homegrown terrorists, such as right-wing nationalists who try to stoke up race war whenever their beady little eyes see a chance. The undercover police person, though, did not just report back to authorities with information about any activities the group was taking on. He integrated himself, made friends, found lovers, and in a betrayal which is hard to fathom, fathered children. This long-running deception shocked many, and given that so many of us now know people who are actively trying to live an environmentally friendly life and make environmentally positive choices when possible, as well as the younger people in our lives being vocal and vociferous in their opinions on the future we hold in trust for them, it appeared that the state, for many, has become the bad guy, operating not for the protection and safety of its people, but rather to make profits for company shareholders. This turn of events, for anyone who is aware of colonialism and Britain's multiple sins, starting with the East India Company and spreading across the globe, will not be surprised. Even less if you are one of the countries like Ireland with an even longer battle with the proto empire. History is increasingly not always written by the winners, but it most certainly is taught by them. Britain is having something of a crisis. Britain is tired, but also many people have, through the clusterfuck of the last 10 years, had their eyes open, have had to reconsider who is the oppressed and who are the oppressors. How complicit am I in this? What futures are we hurtling head on into while repeating all the same mistakes of the past, just with different music and better clothing? So is eco-terrorism still a crime? Yes, it is. The law tends to be unequivocal on this. However, those who operate the law appear to be more flexible and found more of an ability to bend, because when we are too rigid or brittle, we are more likely to break. However, while many governments across the globe appear to refuse to see the calamity in those terms, it's worth wondering if indeed those who are doing the most to pollute specific industries and the government that do little to curb the excesses or promote and support new ways of living and being are in fact the real criminals here, and without us knowing, have sold our future from under us. You have been listening to True Crime Fiction, the podcast that is feeding your addiction to all things crime. You can find our website at true-crime-fiction.com, on Twitter at true_crime_fic, on Facebook and Instagram as True Crime Fiction. Please rate and review on the podcast app of your choice. Music is by Kitty Kitty Meow Meow.
What a depressing note to end on.